Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Now, before we get into anything, guys, I just have to say, I know how you feel, all right? I've been through what you're going through right now, and that is a team that can't pull off a Game 7 victory. Please tell me how you feel. Before we get to Brandon's opinion, Paul, tell me how you're feeling.
That's probably the gist of it. somewhat expected, unfortunately, based upon history. But it was humiliating, to say the least. It's a very humiliating loss. Like, they lost twice like that in two out of three games. Where's the heart? Where's the effort? That's my thought.
I'm glad you turned that around, because I thought the way you were going, I thought we might be starting the show talking about hemorrhoids or something like that. I know how you're feeling. How'd you know?
I mean, we're kind of talking.
Literally.
But I mean, you know, and that's why I wanted to start with Paul first, because I know you're a little bit more, let's say, gentle when it comes to the description of things. I know, Brandon, you're much more emotional when it comes to the Leafs than maybe Paul expresses.
Yeah.
Even though I know he's an emotional fan too, but kind of maybe go through your thoughts and everything of what happened with the Leafs.
Yeah, I mean, the false hope, I think, is the killer off the bat with that series. By the way, In case people are wondering what the heck we're talking about, The Leafs lost in Game 7 to Florida, this powerhouse Panther team. I mean, they're up one game on Carolina right now. We're literally watching Game 2, and they're up 3-0 at the end of the first period.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this Florida team has got it figured out, right? They're built for the playoffs. So what I'd say is that that false hope came from starting the series 2-0.
Yep.
Right? Two games at home, you win both. The second game, I actually thought, I mean, they kind of came out gangbusters on the first game. The second game, I actually thought, was actually okay. And they managed to pull out a victory. The third game, I actually thought they played better than Game 2, but they ended up losing in overtime. So that was like, okay, whatever.
to our favorite player.
Brad Marchand. Thank you very much.
Are you pointing at me? He was pointing at me when he said that. Did you see that?
You can relate. As a Canucks fan.
I can relate as a Canucks fan. That's absolutely true.
Soon to be Maple Leaf, Brad Marchand.
Fingers crossed.
but, you know, that kind of disappointment after the momentum, you know, coming off the Ottawa series in six, and then you're going into this series feeling good. You win the first two games at home. You know, you've got everybody behind you. And then you lay a couple of eggs, so to speak. And then, like, Game 5. What was that?
Yeah.
That's where the embarrassment and the PTSD starts to come in, right? Because we've seen this before, Leafs giving up leads, whether it be in a series, in a game, in a season, whatever. They always seem to just kind of throw it away. At least that's how we feel. It always seems to come down to that in some capacity. Yeah. They can never just dominate.
No, and you know, can you as fans kind of, I would assume it's frustrating kind of seeing that result in Game 5, where it's a 6-1 final, going into Game 6, where they go back to Florida and actually win the game, play well and win the game.
To shut them out.
Yeah.
2-0.
And then come back to Game 7, we'll get into that, but you know, you're going in with kind of this false hope again, right? And kind of getting that idea that maybe they actually are good, and that, you know, Game 5 was just sort of a stinker kind of thing. And it does happen, you know, that can be frustrating as fans, I think.
They seem to fold under pressure. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, they even, like, kind of, they were being outplayed in the first period, and then they kind of started to show up around the halfway through the first, and then second period, it was like they just, I don't know, either they folded under pressure or they fell asleep in the locker room for 20 minutes and then came back onto the ice. I don't know what it was, but not the same team that ended the first period.
Now, let's preface Game 7 a little bit with what you mentioned about Florida, and that maybe they are better than we gave them credit for when you consider how the Leafs played against them in Game 1 and 2. Do you believe that is the reason for the results of Game 7? Because I did see that you had mentioned that you thought the Leafs actually played a decent game in Game 7, only to come short again with a 6-1 final.
It's what happens with this team is what it seems. By the way, you're right. He is totally emotionally under control.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they were being outplayed in the first period. They were getting their lunch handed to them.
That's why I'll admit, and we recognize that with Paul, but that's why I'll admit, like, it's definitely threw me off a little bit when you said that statement of they played a decent game. And I was like, that's not really a typical Brandon statement, especially the day of the game.
The first 10 minutes of that period, shot attempts were 26-0.
Yeah.
For Florida.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the technical stat was 9 minutes and 37 seconds. It wasn't even 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Leafs give up goals in bunches. They get down, like they get behind in a game, and they were, I mean, when Florida scored, they were right in the game still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Initially. And then when they got 2-0, then it just kind of spiraled, right? And that happens often. Mm-hmm. And it always seems to happen in big games.
Yeah.
That's the worst part.
Like, maybe there's so much... I mean, I hate to use this excuse, but maybe there's so much pressure that their mindset kind of, builds up to it, and then that's what makes them lose. I don't know, ultimately, but it's hard to sit here and say, you know, it's the Leafs fans' fault for making them feel this pressure, or if it's the media's fault, when these are professional hockey players who, you know, they understand there's pressure anyway, no matter where you go. It's just in some places they might feel like there's more pressure than others. Like, what do you think is the real reason behind that sort of, that failure, quote-unquote?
They've been under pressure for 9 years.
Yeah.
That doesn't fly with me anymore, the pressure thing. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
There's no question, but you got to overcome it at some point. And if you're not going to do it, see you later.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's ultimately going to happen. There's going to be changes, right? I don't know what those are.
Yeah, like I don't think a full identity change is what's needed, but certainly some different voices at this point in the room, because they've been playing the same voices for the last 9 years, and it's been the same, you know, answer, or the same, I don't know what word I would use, the same product every year that seems to not pull through. Like, they're built like kind of like the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, 10, 15 years ago, that were able to pull off playoff wins. These guys are built that way, but they can't seem to pull it together.
It's funny because they were showing, you know, the Florida's kind of media availability after the game, and they were praising the Leafs, saying that they were a really good team. They don't understand why they play the way they do, because they are such a good team. He's like, I think it was Matthew Tkachuk was saying, like, if these guys were playing literally anywhere else, they would be championship team based on the people that are on the team.
I mean, there could be some merit to that, Joe. Yeah. But I mean, between the ears, right?
That's what I was going to say. Like, I really think that that's kind of like speculative, because anybody could say that about any team, ultimately, really. Yep. I think really it's just their way of kind of, I don't even know if that's technically easing the crowd, because if anything, you're making Leaf fans feel worse for cheering for the team, you know, and putting that pressure, quote unquote. I just think that maybe it's another way of kind of chirping in some perspective, you know.
It is. I mean, maybe. But the Leafs had injuries, no question about that. Their captain, their star player, was injured all season. He was injured in training camp.
That's right.
You know, Paul, to your point a minute ago, I would argue that this might have been the first year that their identity did change a little bit under Craig Berube.
Yeah.
Right? And the way they played the game was different.
Playoff style.
You know, more playoff style hockey all year. The big start was with the complete makeover of their decor. So, we'll probably get into it a little bit later. I think we'll talk a little bit more about the second round, but there was some news coming out of Toronto today that could be crucial to the way changing of the guard, so to speak. But at the end of the day, you look at the Florida Panthers, and they're the Stanley Cup champions. They faltered down the stretch because they had three of their top players injured. Right? That also allowed them to go $40 million over the cap, you know, at the trade deadline. But they were they were playing without Ekblad, they were playing without Tkachuk, and they were also playing without Marchand.
That's right.
Who they picked up. And I think there was someone else who was injured for a while too. One of their bottom six players, but one of the guys that just one of those workhorses, Listerinen or something like that, was injured for 8 or 9 games. I can't remember. But when they got healthy enough, and they were able to get healthy moving into the playoffs, they basically rolled over Tampa. And then, you know, Toronto kind of gave them a shot and saying, hey, we're here to play.
Yeah,
and I think that they were. Yeah, it sucks. The result sucks. There's no question that the result sucks. But I really don't have too much of an issue with the way the series went, except for those two embarrassing games.
Yeah.
Lose a game 4-3 in a hard-fought competitive game. I won't even scoff at it. I mean, you'd be disappointed for an hour or two, but you showed up, you had the effort, you played the game the way it's supposed to be played. You didn't end up getting the result you wanted, but you were there. You were in it. You lose 6-1. You're not even close to being in it, even though the Florida Panthers said that they were. Yeah. Well, oh, they were closer than you thought.
They tied for the worst margin of loss in a Game 7 in league history.
Oh, perfect. That's another record.
Not good.
Vancouver had to have been close with that Stanley Cup final in 2011 with a 4-0 loss. But absolutely, I can see that, and I can completely understand why Leaf fans would be frustrated, upset, you name it. But like you say, there is a little bit of aspect of like hang your head because, or hang your head high because in the end, it was Game 7 of the second round versus the Stanley Cup champions. So that's something. You guys pushed them to the brink, basically. Unfortunately, the game wasn't the way you wanted it to be, but in the end, you got to hang on. Like, this is the thing that Berube was saying, is like, this is the kind of stuff you have to hang on to for next season, because if you're in the playoffs, this is the stuff that puts you over the edge, and this is the stuff that Stanley Cup champions have to deal with.
Yeah,
Florida dealt with losing in the Stanley Cup final the previous year,
it was Vegas,
yeah, against Vegas, and then they came back and won the cup. So
like, definitely the team I think will learn from this. I think there is going to be change. Like, obviously there's some pretty big UFAs for Leafs this summer, and there's a couple of UFAs that are available. I know there's been lots of discussion about short-term deals for the Leafs, that they're going to pick up players to replace, say, if a Marner leaves or even if a Tavares leaves. I don't think Tavares is going to, but I think Marner is kind of looking out the door at this point, because McDavid, if he doesn't resign in the offseason to an extension, there's going to be a lot of people chasing him the following year.
Yeah.
Give him $20
million. 31 other teams will be chasing him, 100%. But, it'll be really hard. It'll be really hard for Edmonton, I think, to watch a player like McDavid walk away. They're probably going to give him literally the keys to the team to make him stay.
The only way he doesn't stay is if he doesn't want to be there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
The narrative that Matthews sprung after the game about there was too many passengers, that's kind of irked me the last few days.
Yeah.
Whose job is it to stop that?
Exactly. Captain?
The coach can't do it. I mean, he can motivate you as much as he can. He can prepare you. He can set the systems. The players have to execute.
Yeah.
So who are these passengers?
It's a combination, right? Like, it's a combination, like, especially going into a game seven, it's a combination of like making sure the coach is making sure the team is ready to play for the beginning of the game, for puck drop. But the captain has to also keep steering the ship, so to speak, right? Lead by example, show via communication, however you can, to get the team going in the right direction. And then, if you're laying an egg, so to speak, a lot of that can be placed on the captain and the coach.
Game 7, Paul, who stuck out for you as a positive? I've got two players that stick out for me.
Yeah, Domi. Scott Laughton was one of them.
Domi for me.
Domi, yeah.
He's the only goal scorer.
Yeah. He was. I'd say Scott Laughton for me was one of them, and probably OEL a little bit, to be honest. I thought he actually played pretty good.
I would agree with you with Scott Laughton. He'd probably be third for me.
Yeah.
But Chris Tanev, just a beast. Always. Playoff MVP for the Leafs, in my opinion. And I agree with you with Domi. He stunk up the joint in the regular season. Terrible season.
I just think about this from the outside looking in. I thought Domi had the best playoffs period out of all the Leafs, in my opinion. He was the most consistent player.
Some bad penalties.
Yeah. But he, he made up for it with goal scoring. He made up for it with...
You could see he cared.
Yeah, with effort.
You could see he cared. And
Carolina just got on board, by the way. It's 3-1.
All right. Oh, there's a chance.
But you're saying like
Carolina.
So like one in a million?
Yeah. So you're saying there's a chance.
He did care, but that might work out for Toronto's favor. If Marner does leave this free agency... Domi's played with Matthews in the past, and he could fill in on Marner's spot. I think he'd actually be a good fit with Nias and Matthews on the first line.
I wonder if Berube is thinking, kind of going into next season, like hypothetically, if you know, Marner's not coming back. If that's kind of the direction he wants to go, with somebody with a bit more physicality, a better playmaker, like...
I think he wanted to do that this year that he didn't have the personnel.
Yeah. No, and they couldn't trade him. You know, like it's...
Yeah,
they,
that's true.
They tried to trade him at the beginning
of
the season.
But they couldn't.
They tried to trade him at the trade deadline, and they couldn't because he's like, nope, I want to stay.
Now, I know, I understand that this is sidetracking, but I understand that a lot of Leaf fans are kind of upset with him for saying no, that he didn't want to go. But we also understand that he was having a baby and didn't want to have to
uproot
his family.
Yeah. You're an idiot if you look at that player and say, you should have waived.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, for who?
Yeah.
For the team? The team that you're leaving?
He has every right to say no. He has every right to say no. I think if any of us were in that same position, having a baby, this is his first baby, if I'm not mistaken.
And he's from Toronto.
Yeah,
his wife's from Toronto. They live in Toronto.
Exactly.
Give your head a shake.
Now, think if the Leafs had made the move for Rantanen when Carolina did, like, because there was the deal at the two firsts, Cowan and Minton. Think about if they had Rantanen right now, who's leading the league.
Are you serious?
In the playoffs right now.
That was the deal on the table?
That was the deal on the table.
Oh, I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of glad they didn't do that.
I mean, Rantanen's
leading the league right now.
Yeah, but anybody can lead the league in playoffs every year.
Now when he's changing the
fate of a team. I want to get into Rantanen a little bit more in a little bit.
I want to get into Rant too.
No, I want to talk more about that in a minute because there's obviously stuff I want to get into when it comes to outside our teams that we follow. But just sort of finishing up on the Leafs, like when we look at the way things are kind of going, and you were kind of alluding to, you know, this a little earlier, but like there's a big notice that's been made today in that we found out that Brandon Shanahan's not coming back.
As president, yeah.
So the Shanna plan is done.
Out of here.
It happened fast because this morning there was a report out that the Islanders had asked for permission to speak to him. And then within like 6 hours... That's it. We're not renewing your contract.
And yeah, I was going to say, and the report that Shanahan released was that it was not his decision.
No. No,
it was actually the Leafs' decision. Yeah, so MLSE.
It's Pelly. He's the new CEO, right?
Yeah.
He's come in, and last year he made a statement. He's like, we're winning a championship. I don't care about anything else.
Yeah.
I don't care about jersey sales. I don't care about ticket sales. We need to give this city a championship.
100%.
Right?
100%.
So,
I feel like every Canadian team should have that mentality.
Yes.
Now, you know, one thing I do want to mention, a lot of people probably don't realize, don't know, maybe don't care, but Brendan Shanahan actually did an unbelievable job for this team as president, not necessarily with the on-ice product. I mean, it was good. The Leafs haven't missed the playoffs in 9 years.
Yep.
They've been competitive in their division every year and in the toughest division in hockey up until maybe this year.
Yeah.
I would say Atlantic Division has been the toughest division for years, right?
Years, yeah.
Brendan Shanahan brought in programs, brought in... charities and different setups and
got the alumni involved.
Partnerships, the alumni. Yeah. Like he did so much, and that was him.
Yeah.
That was him that did that. So you can't really knock Shanahan for the job that he did overall as an organization. It's one of the reasons that Toronto has actually been a little bit more of an attractive place to play, even though it's the mecca of the hockey world and sometimes it sucks to play there, right? With everything that goes on.
I want to get into that a little bit too, because you know, there's always this speculation of the amount of pressure that Canadian teams have from the fan base. And we talked about this a little earlier, but there's a little pressure or a lot of pressure from the fan base to bring out a winning team, and that can be a deterrent for some players. I want to get into that a little bit more later because there's some rebuttal to that that I have from people that I trust in terms of like people who've worked in the business. I'm talking specifically about Rick Tocchet, in that the Canucks, of course, no longer having Rick Tocchet behind the bench, but we'll get into that a little bit later. I just want to finish up with our Leaf talk first.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. We kind of said what we needed to, I think. I mean, I did anyway.
Yeah.
But fans will be pissed for a week or two.
They'll
be ready for next season again.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, though. So now that the Shanna plan is done, is that a little bit, like... Is that a little bit nerve-wracking to think like that you as fans no longer know the direction of the team?
No, not for me. It's not.
No, not when it's not when it's been kind of the same thing over and over.
Yeah,
and
like
again.
What is the definition of insanity? Right,
yeah, it's been stale.
They need more championship quality players. Not that they don't have good players; they have really good players, but they need, I guess, maybe that extra experience, that the people that get them over the hump. Again, I've talked about it earlier in our podcast. Sam Bennett's a UFA this summer. He probably will resign with Florida. Why wouldn't you? You're possibly going to win two championships in a row. But if he doesn't, he's my number one choice.
Well, Florida's not going to have the cap space.
I was just going to say, I don't think Florida's going to resign him. I don't think they're going to have the money to be able to do it, unless they make a big trade that allows them to do that. But
that's true.
But if anything, it might make them worse in the end.
I guarantee they're going to try to resign Ekblad before they do Bennett.
Yeah. But yeah, like the money that Marner wants right now, they're saying somewhere between $13 to $14 million a year.
I think they called off
the
goal.
Yeah, they did.
Offside.
I'd rather that spent on two players than just the one.
At least two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you want to address the needs that you have, and you want to do it in the most cost-effective way. We're lucky in that the cap is going up this year. What is it, $4 million?
$9 million.
Yeah. Okay. I stand corrected.
Yeah.
So it's going up $9 million. That gives a lot of people, a lot of teams, the opportunity to improve their teams. Now, that being said, you know, you only have so many roster spots. So that's the part that kind of makes it tricky for team. I think of Vancouver when I say this, because for me, it's like, okay, we've only got so much room, but we need to improve these spots. Who are we going to see go, and who are we going to see come, right? So it's going to be tricky. And I'm sure the Leafs are kind of in the same boat.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree.
But based on that, just based on what you guys have seen, let's say hypothetically, you know, what the statement that the Florida Panthers have said about the Leafs being an actual competitive team, and that they're better than they appear. What do you think the actual needs they need to address this offseason are?
Probably more physicality. Like, they were a physical team this year, but physicality and skill, probably a mixture of both. One of the problems they've had during the playoffs so far has been scoring. And the more playoff style players they can bring in that have some skill with it, I think that's going to push them over the top.
They need three Kiefer Sherwoods on their team, to put it in Canucks terms.
Yeah.
They need strong forecheckers, fast, gritty players that they just don't have enough of. They had a couple of ghosts in the playoffs. Bobby McMahon had 22 goals regular season.
He had nothing.
He did literally nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yep. He only finished his check because that's what he knows he has to do in the playoffs. That's the only thing he did well.
Yeah. I try to think about that, and I was like, well, what goes through a player's mind in that case? Like, why would he stop playing that style just because it's the playoffs?
And it's not always the case. I mean, it's sometimes it's victim of circumstance. But you're going to notice when you put up goose eggs.
Yeah.
Like, if you'd had a goal and three assists through the playoffs, like, even that, probably nobody would even be really talking about. But he's just, like, just nothing.
He wasn't even scratched either. Like, I would have preferred having a David Kampen at that point, somebody that is strong defensively.
Pontus Holmberg, another player who was just kind of a passenger, you know, to use the quote from Matthews, for most of the series. And he was getting second-line minutes. He's playing on the second line with Tavares and Nylander.
Right.
And, I mean, he's good defensively, but he can't stay on his feet. He has zero hands. And you can't tell me there isn't one or two players on the Marlies that could come up and fill that role. It's just, I don't know. For me, it's all about the energy. And that's what's needed. I don't care how they do it or what they need to do to fix it. They'll probably bring in a couple of players that, you know, aren't nearly as skilled. But, like, my biggest example that I can think of is they need one or two Travis Konechnys. Clayton Keller out of Utah.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of a small, skilled, gritty guy.
Yeah.
Brad Marchand, you know, a younger version.
Maybe, you might be able
maybe
to
not
afford
as much of a dink, but
you might be able to afford Brad Marchand.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, this offseason, if he decides he wants to play in a Canadian market, I could totally see that.
Yeah.
I could totally see that.
Him and Tavares on a line together.
Now, let me ask you this, because I know you say goal scoring is number one, but what about goaltending? I mean, we lost 6-1 twice in the second round against the Florida Panthers, the Stanley Cup champions. You know, Stolarz going down injured was not a good thing, obviously, for you guys. But let's talk about depth when it comes to goaltending for the Leafs. I mean, is Wall the end-all be-all when it comes to, like, your goaltending?
Every other team in the NHL wants to trade for Joseph Wall.
Yeah.
He's a good goaltender. he let in some questionable goals in Game 7.
So is that a pressure thing? I was going to say, is that a pressure thing, or is that just Florida being, they studied him and they understand?
Florida being Florida, but, you know, it's...
Traffic in front of the net, he can't see the puck half the time.
He's smaller than Stolarz, right?
So. I could argue the same thing about Stuart Skinner, right, for Edmonton. I mean, if you, and again, I wanted to get into this later, but if you watch that game against Dallas, like, same thing. Traffic in front of the net is what beat him, right? So
the two best goalies in the world, Vasilevsky and Connor Hellebuck, were god-awful.
Yeah.
God-awful.
Yeah.
Way worse than Joe Woll.
Very true.
And as an example. So, I mean, your goaltending is always going to be questionable at high-profile situations, right? Yeah. You let in one stinker, the world's going to end.
Yeah.
So.
However, Stewart is kind of, right now for his career, like
Stuart Skinner.
Stuart Skinner is considered one of the worst career playoff save percentages ever.
785 or something. It's so ever. Bad. There's people that have batting averages higher than that.
But I mean, this is, you know, we talked about this last summer when we were talking about the Oilers and hanging on to Skinner.
Yeah.
It was baffling to us, but it's so funny because, you know, we thought Skinner was going to lose it for Edmonton against LA in the first round. And I think he sat out two games or something like that. And then he had to come in. And then he played well all of a sudden. So it's like, it's weird. It's like he just needs to recharge or something. But
Picard won them the second round.
Yeah, Picard did. Yeah. But when Skinner played, he did come back and play well that one game that he came back. So it's just baffling.
Not against Dallas, though, that letting those goals in.
And it's one game, but, you know, I want to talk about that a little bit later. But so basically you're saying, though, ultimately goaltending is not really an issue.
I haven't had an issue with their goaltending all year. Yeah, you complain and moan about a few here or there, but ultimately up until probably the All-Star break, they had the best goaltending save percentage in the NHL. As a tandem, so
nice.
Stolarz was a bit of a surprise. I mean, they've always said that he could be a number one goaltender, but has never really been given the opportunity. Well, he wasn't initially in Toronto either.
Yeah,
he took it. He took the reins. He took the role, and he embraced it. And he's done well. He's got everything about him that's good for a goaltender: size,
athletic ability,
being technical. He's vocal with his teammates. He lets them know, like, coming on you behind the net, you know, up the boards. Yeah. You can hear him on the broadcast yelling, right?
Yeah.
And you hear CC and Craig, oh, there's Stolarz again. You know, like, you can hear it plain as day. So, I mean, and does he have one more year?
One more year.
He does. Okay.
2.5. So,
yeah, that's an unreal contract. That's a great contract. Too, so.
Now, Bennett does sign with the Leafs in the offseason. At least we don't have to worry about him injuring another Leafs player.
Maybe he will. Maybe he just won't even be aware of what's going on.
Bennett
will take out Stolarz in training camp, and Nazem Kadri will get suspended for it.
That'd be hilarious if he still finds a way to hurt him. Oh, man.
You play for us.
Yeah. You're on our team, man. It happens, though. It does happen. I mean, players go hard in practice and... You know, people get hurt and stuff. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I tend to agree with you, actually. I think goaltending is really not really the concern. Finish is probably number one when it comes down to it. Like finding a way to get traffic in front of the goalie, trying to get, and maybe that's a size issue. I don't know. But those specific plays, because Berube and Tocchet are very similar. They're very, very similar in terms of play style.
Very.
When it comes to like getting a point shot through, that's kind of priority over any other play, like especially on the power play. Traffic in front of the net is key. Like you need somebody blocking the goalie's view, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole point of it. So
I don't know how to fix this necessarily, but what I would say through two rounds that the Leafs were in, they got... dominated by both opposition's forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
So the either the system in the defensive zone has to change or they have to learn to move the puck quicker. I don't know, but they were getting hemmed by Ottawa and Florida.
I wonder if that's right? Just defensive coaching.
Well, and they were talking about the passengers thing. Maybe that's what they're talking about. It's like, stop standing around. I had many regular season games this year. I saw them just standing and waiting to get a pass.
Get your
feet moving, man. Yeah. Like constantly be on the cycle because a team like Florida, even Ottawa, is not going to stand around and be like, well, you know, maybe I'll wait for the puck to come to me. No, they're chasing after. Get in there. Yeah.
2-4 checkers every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Leafs don't do that. And I think they need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the lack of ability to manufacture goals.
Yeah,
I think it, as a general statement, is one of the biggest hurdles they need to overcome. They have the talent to score goals. If you put Nylander in the slot, he's going to score 8 out of 10 times. Definitely. If you put Matthews in the slot, not injured, he might even score 9 out of 10 times.
Right.
But if you don't have the ability to manufacture goals, you're everything's to the outside. You're forced away, boxed out.
You might as well be shooting at a wall.
Yeah. There's no point in even letting it off. That's why they don't have any shots every game.
Yeah.
Their highest shot total in the playoffs was like 28 shots a game.
Yeah.
When your goaltender's facing 35, 40 shots a game.
I mean, you should be learning from that defensive structure too. Like, if you're really thinking about it, like if a team is keeping you boxed out to the outside, that's exactly how you should be playing defensively when you're on that end of the puck.
And
really.
I thought they did for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, that's what was a lot of improvement came in that exact area.
Yeah,
this year with their defense.
One final thought before we move on, gentlemen, about the Leafs.
I'm excited to see what change is going to happen. Keith Pelley said that they're likely not going to have a president for the regular season next year. That he's going to kind of take the reins for that. For now, they're going to keep Brad Treliving. That's another thing they had mentioned. So
he did a fine job.
Yeah, he did a good job.
He got the players.
Gave up a lot of, obviously, in some of the trades, but that's hockey. So I'm excited to see what the offseason is like. It's sad that we have to talk about the offseason right now, but hey, you know, there's always next year.
There's always next year. How many years have we been saying that now? Since 1967?
Seven, yeah.
1967. So right now, the Leafs have the longest, they've gone the longest amongst all other teams for a Stanley Cup drought, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Canucks are just behind them.
Yeah. So 1970.
Buffalo. Oh, no. Buffalo did.
Buffalo and Canucks came in the same year. So Buffalo and Canucks are basically neck and neck.
But has Buffalo had a Stanley Cup? I actually don't know the answer
Never.
To that. No.
They haven't. No.
Having said that, to mirror, so to speak, the Leafs also have the current longest consecutive playoff streak, too.
Yeah, that's it's kind of ironic when you think about it, right? But
more
yeah,
painful that way.
And honestly, though, as a fan, that I think that's something you can hang your hat on. Like you know, there, like you say, there is always next year, especially having the players you have. So you have the ability to come back next year, especially with a $9 million cap increase, to make your team even better and hopefully do something and actually make a run next year, as long as they remember what happened this year. I think that's the key.
I think another key point to add to that is that you look at the top of that division in Florida and Tampa, they've used up their future in going for the cup the last, say, 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So they're going to now start going down, just like Boston did.
Yeah.
Boston went really regressed this year, right?
Yeah.
I think you're going to see the same from Tampa and Florida. I don't think you'll see quite a change in Toronto as you will in the other two.
No.
I think Tampa specifically.
Yeah, Tampa.
But like Tampa could be 10th, 11th in the division next
They've year. Already shown that this year. Like they're definitely
Sorry,
on a
in
downward
the conference, not the division.
they're definitely on a downward spiral just based on the fact that they couldn't do anything against Florida in the first round. That being said, again, we don't want to take away the credit from Florida being the team that they are too.
Yeah.
Now, let me talk a little bit about the Canucks here, gentlemen. I only want to say a little bit about it. And really what I want to talk about is the coaching change. As we know, Rick Tocchet had decided he's not going to be the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks next year. And the Canucks have decided to hire Adam Foote as the head coach. And there's sort of a 50-50 kind of feeling amongst the Canuck fans when it comes to if it's a good move or not to kind of promote Adam Foote. And I'm going to kind of be pro Adam Foote here. And I wanted Manny Malhotra as our coach because I thought he had the sort of the opportunity to do what he's doing now in Abbotsford, considering the fact that they're still in the playoffs. They just won their first game of the third round yesterday. So they're still playing strong in the playoffs, in the AHL playoffs. It's his first year as a head coach, period. So to just give the guy the keys to the team after 1 year, you know, he has a 3-year contract with Abbotsford. Adam Foote also has a 3-year contract. So there's potential that if things don't work out with Adam Foote, that Malhotra has the opportunity to come up and take over the team. I actually think Adam Foote's going to be a really good head coach for Vancouver. When you consider the fact that he was in charge of the penalty kill, he was in charge of the defensive structure for the team last year as the assistant coach, and they were one of the best defensive teams in the league, as well as one of the best PKs in the league. He's bringing that as a head coach. Now he just has to bring along an offensive coach, somebody who can help, you know, organize the power play, organize an offensive structure. That will really help the team. And then somebody else who can kind of coincide with that. I think they're going to be looking good next year. I'm not too concerned about it.
I think a guy who might be a good fit, he was a coach with the Leafs, and I liked how they played when they had him on the team, was Dave Haxtell.
Yeah.
I think he'd be a good fit with Foote.
There was talk. I saw that there has been discussions amongst the media as to who they think that they might bring in, and Haxtell was definitely a name that they were talking about. Another one was possibly Jay Woodcroft, but I don't see that because I think Woodcroft is going to try to get another head coaching job.
Well, he's interviewed for the job in Boston.
That's right, and I think also Seattle, if I remember correctly. I can't remember off the top of my head, but
Seattle requested permission from Toronto this morning to talk to Lane Lambert, former Islander coach.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that guy's got the passion.
We just found out today that Jeff, what's his name, from the Tampa Bay?
Blashill.
Yeah, Jeff Blashill is going to be head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. So their head coaching position is filled. It's interesting because, you know, when these jobs get filled, they also bring assistant coaches with them. So you're going to start seeing a lot of guys, a lot of names come up for assistant coaching jobs that you're going to go like, whoa, didn't think of that guy. But these are probably former players and stuff like that we're going to start seeing, you know, in those positions too. So it's going to be really interesting to see like who they pull to be these, you know, assistant coaches.
So do you guys think it's rude at all that the NHL starts conducting business while the playoffs are still going on, like teams that are out? Do you have a problem with that at all?
No.
Is it like the maid of honor getting proposed to at the bride's wedding? You know what I mean? Like, the reason I ask is my thought process would be they probably want to get it done sooner than later because you've got the draft coming.
Exactly.
The agency, yeah. All within like 5 weeks, right?
Yep.
And they want that coach's input on decisions that are made. And they want the coaches to be able to talk to those specific players that they're drafting to so that they can kind of go, here's what I want you to work on over the summer, stuff like that, right? Because if you're going to make the team, you need to be able to do this.
Yeah. What type of player are you? Are you going to fit our system?
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, I think the teams that are in the playoffs can technically do the same thing. The reason that they don't is it's a distraction from their play on the ice.
Hopefully they're not looking for new coaches during
Florida may not fire Paul Maurice. We'll have to see.
Gotta wait till the last game. It's kind of why, though, it doesn't surprise me that the Canucks didn't go with Malhotra, because he's in the middle of coaching the Abbotsford Canucks in the playoffs as we speak. So I was kind of like, well, how is that going to work? Like, oh, they decided to hire Malhotra, so Malhotra just leaves the Abbotsford Canucks bench? No, I imagine they would let him finish it off. But
now we worry about sometimes like distractions, as I just mentioned, for a team. Do you think his whole thing going on with his son is going to be a distraction for him at
all? Yeah, it's an interesting question. I know that that's one of the reasons why people are upset about him being hired, because the sort of controversy. But the way I see it, and maybe this is ignorant of me, and forgive me if it is, but the way I see it, it's not like Adam Foote is the one who caused the misdemeanor. Like, he wasn't involved in any way. So for me, it's like, why wouldn't they consider him in that specific area? That being said, I'm not sensitive I am sensitive to the idea of course, there's a reason why people would be concerned. You know, it's a legitimate concern, but I don't think that for him, there's anything he can do about it anyway. So in terms of it being a distraction, it wasn't a distraction for him as an assistant coach last year. I don't see why it would be as a head coach either.
Now, it is his son, right? And that's the thing. Like, every father has, you know, their child on their mind all the time, right? So, and if his son did get convicted, you know, could that be...
Then it could be. For sure it could be. Absolutely. I mean, maybe he'll take a leave from the team at that point. Who knows?
Yeah.
So to your point, I don't think anybody's questioning the fact that Foote's the right guy for the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, the crap that's going on that he has no control over. That aside, that still doesn't that still doesn't stop the fact that it could create a distraction anyway.
Yeah. You're right.
Outside of Toronto, you could argue that it's either Vancouver or Montreal is probably the next highest pressure spot in Canada for hockey, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Vancouver is going to get the coverage. I mean, Montreal is going to get the coverage if they can translate. And then it's it's just, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's and that's a legitimate concern, I think, when it comes down to it. It's like, you know, and the one thing that Vancouver doesn't want is they don't want that black cloud over top of them, because they've had that for the past 2 years, 3 years over their team. So, you know, they were able to sort of avoid it 2 years ago. But last year, the black cloud was there with the whole JT Miller, Elias Pettersson thing.
Yeah.
And we still, to this day, like this offseason, have no idea what the team's going to do to kind of erase that black cloud, especially with the way Elias Pettersson finished the season last year. There's a lot of speculation that he, you know, was fighting an oblique injury, and that was one of the reasons why he was playing the way he was. But the only time will tell, and it's a matter of does he remain, because they can trade him before July 1st. There's a chance that he gets traded, but at the same time, as a Canuck fan, I'm hoping that doesn't happen. Just for the sake of, the last thing you want is a whole Cam Neely situation all over again.
Yeah. I have a quick theory that I think, just as a note, I think that's what was hurting Matthews this year, was his oblique.
Oh, yeah.
Because it didn't quite affect his shot enough that he couldn't get anything on it. It didn't quite affect his skating enough that he couldn't get going. But it was enough, I don't know, it just midsection, it screams to me, just the way it affects everything else.
Could have been his back. He had two pretty bad cross checks to the back earlier in the year, and he was injured from one of them for a few games. So, well, he hasn't said anything about his injuries, which he has every right to, and hope that whatever time he has this offseason, he's able to fully recover, right? Not have to go back to Switzerland again.
Now, going back to what I was saying earlier about Rick Tocchet had said in an interview with Donnie and Dolly a couple of days ago, I think Monday, he was discussing, they were asking him basically, like, how do you feel about Adam Foote taking over the team? Like, you know, what are your thoughts on Vancouver, blah, blah, blah. Like, are you upset at Vancouver? Is that why you decided, blah, 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 right? So Rick Tocchet basically said, he didn't say specifically why he left. He refuses to say, like, straight up why he left Vancouver. I'm a firm believer that it was a family decision. Like, I really think he wanted to be closer to family. I think he wanted to go back to Philly, especially considering the opening was there after
Tortorella.
I was going to say Trotz. After Tortorella left the team, that I think he's just like, this is my opportunity to coach in Philly, where I've always wanted to coach. And so he took that opportunity. I do not blame him at all for that. As a Canuck fan, I don't blame him at all for that. It's sad that he's not going to be coaching the Canucks anymore. But there were certain flaws in his style that I kind of recognized this year. And I think that's kind of where somebody like Adam Foote has the opportunity to kind of make better. And that is by bringing in sort of like a better offensive, you know, style coach, assistant coach to help him out there. Because defense, I think they have no problem. They have some good depth on defense too, now that they've signed Tom Wallander and stuff too. So it's going to be an exciting year. But I think that was sort of what I wanted to say about the whole Rick Tocchet thing, is that, you know, Rick Tocchet said in the interview that, you know, I don't want anyone to think that there's this big misconception about coaching in a Canadian market. He's like, coaching in Vancouver was one of the best things I've ever done. And he's like, I know you're probably like, well, then why did you leave? But honestly, like, I have my reasons. But just know, the pressure that is put on a person, whether you're a coach or a player in a Canadian market, you thrive on that. And he was emphasizing that. He's like, you thrive on that. It's actually one of the best things in the world. It's what any player would want. He's like, don't ever think that nobody wants to go to a Canadian market. If anything, that's all we want to do. And it totally makes sense when you look at it that way, you know?
10 episodes ago-ish, I told you guys after I took Mom to that game against Detroit.
Yeah.
I was blown away. I hadn't been to an NHL game in like 15 years, maybe even more. What a blast. Yeah. Like, Vancouver, the stadium was rocking, man. Yeah. The fans were nuts. It was such a good time. Like, I couldn't believe that all of a sudden it was the third period.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I want more of this. I can't believe I'm saying, oh, my God.
Oh. It hurts him to talk
actually
about
it. Was given high fives when the Canucks scored, I guess. And, you know, we briefly talked about maybe going over and catching a game, at least the three of us, next year.
Yeah,
we definitely should. And maybe inviting a couple other friends.
Maybe even live stream.
We'll have to vlog it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we can live stream it, but we'll vlog it for sure.
I mean, I'll give you a hold the camera, buddy,
while
no
I'm watching
problem.
The game. Yeah. I'll let you do
we'll
it.
We'll just have like a little thing hanging off her neck. With the camera.
But yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, and I think that can be said in any Canadian market. Like, if we went to a Winnipeg game, I'm sure it would be the same exact mm-hmm. feeling. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ultimately, that's just it. I think there's a huge misconception amongst the fans of Canadian teams that players don't want to play here. And I think that's unfortunate that they would think that, because really I think the players want to play here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just that they also want, you know, a certain amount of money. They want a certain amount of, they want a guarantee that they'll be able to play in that spot for a certain amount of time for their families more than anything. So I think that's really the big misconception when it comes to Canadian markets.
Obviously, we did talk ad nauseum about the Leafs and their second round exit. The Athletic wrote an article about the four teams that were eliminated in the second round here. So we won't necessarily cover their portion of the Leafs, but they gave quotes for kind of each team. Let me know what each of you guys think about it.
Okay.
When it came to the Vegas Golden Knights, the main header for them was that depth matters. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that's the one thing they were missing. The moment you get one of your good players, your star players, quote unquote, gets injured, you need somebody to be able to pick up that workload and you know, not hurt the team. And I think that was the one thing that they were missing, is that depth for sure.
Is Jack Eichel one of, if not the most underrated player in the NHL?
Yeah.
He just does everything well.
He does.
Everything.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think you could argue, you know, when a player gets traded from one team to another and he becomes this whole other, he goes up this whole other level of, you know, skill or whatever, it's just, I think a lot of times it's about who he's playing with and also what team he's on, because there might be other players that are considered superstars on that team, and then he becomes a superstar going to another team. And I think that's exactly what happened with him. Even though he was the superstar in Buffalo,
hard not to be.
I really think that it comes down to coaching and it comes down to who you're playing with more than anything. I would argue Tage Thompson is basically the Jack Eichel now in Buffalo.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Now that Jack's not there.
That pedestal that Vegas created for themselves, I think they crashed down hard from it. But they sacrificed a lot of their future to win now.
And
they did.
And it's
they
so did, yeah. funny to say that they crashed down hard when they're still making the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they're still, you know, they're still a strong team in the regular season. So they're not quite there yet. They're not rebuilding, but...
What I would argue up until this point is that the Pacific Division hasn't been very good.
Exactly.
Up that until maybe this year.
No, you're absolutely right.
That is true.
That's a fair point.
Washington Capitals, it's hard to stay fresh in the playoffs. So when they were saying that, they kind of meant, you know, health around the players and how they respond to injuries on the team.
Well, don't eat Subway and a milkshake before the game, maybe. Yeah.
Don't bring a McDonald's with you when you're walking through the tunnel.
I don't know. The best goal scorer of all time. He sucks.
I'm gonna say this about Washington, and I'll leave it at that, is that this season, no matter how they finished this season, all that mattered was that Ovi beat that record. And that's exactly what the season was about. They're going to hang a banner for that guy. You know what I mean? Like, yep. It just, that's all that mattered.
I think Washington got away from their game too much.
100%.
Carolina is another one of those really strong forechecking teams. And a lot like Florida. Oh, there's a broken stick.
Currently down 3-0 in the second period to Florida. That goal they did score was disallowed.
Oh, here comes 4-0.
And Florida's about
Florida
to
also had a
rat one, goal. Rat two, and yeah. Where's rat three? Oh no, he's not on this line.
He's not on the line. No.
Anyways, about Carolina, Washington.
I just think that Carolina was just, they were too much for them on the forecheck. And, you know, Washington's a little bit of a slower team.
Yeah.
They're big.
Older.
They're mean. They're nasty. And that's how they tried to play the series. And Carolina was just like, go ahead.
Washington's going to be the same exact team next year, too.
Yep. Yep.
As long as Ovi's on the team, they're going to be that same team next year. Oh, absolutely. There you go. There's the
fourth goal.
Rat two.
And Winnipeg, Hellebuck is the new playoff Bob, so they're kind of going with the fact that he's a great regular season goaltender, but he seems to change his wage on the playoffs.
I would say this offseason will be a very, very important one for Winnipeg. They need to make certain moves that doesn't hamper them for next year so that they can be the same quality team they were this year. Because if they go in and they win this, if they pull a Vancouver 2012 and win the President's Trophy again next year and then lose out in the first round, they're blowing that team up.
So let me ask you guys this. Is it just playoffs or is it just big stage? Because he was terrible in the Four Nations.
Big stage.
It's gotta be, right?
Probably
like,
big
but I also, makes you think there's definitely something between the ears that's going on with that guy, because like he really did look bad in the Four Nations.
I also don't fully blame him. Like, yes, yeah, he looked bad. I don't fully blame him. I think the defense played a huge part in that too, and a lot of the goals that he let up. But yeah, there were some soft ones there for sure.
I mean, Lowry played hurt the whole playoffs.
He was probably the best player on Winnipeg, in my opinion.
And probably still didn't play up to what he normally would, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Of the four remaining teams, who would you like to see in the final?
Oh, Dallas. I predict Dallas to win the Stanley Cup. We're not going to have enough time for me to talk about the Dallas-Edmonton series. All I'm going to say is, Dallas seems to me like the team that wants it more, maybe has better depth than Edmonton does, but it is only one game. So you just never know. This could go seven games with Edmonton. I just feel like Dallas is a stronger team. They're going to go to the Stanley Cup. I think they're going to win the final against Florida. That's my prediction.
My want is Dallas and Carolina in the final, but I don't think it's going to be that way. I think it will be Dallas and Florida, and I think that Florida is going to take it. They're just...
What do you think? Florida in, like, six?
No.
Seven?
No.
Four?
No. I think
you're thinking five.
I think five games, yeah.
And interesting. I would love Dallas and Carolina just for the storyline of the Rantanen and Coven trade.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would be...
I totally agree with you. I mean, they had that with Colorado.
Yeah.
I think... The benefit with Florida and Dallas, in my opinion, the reason why I think it'll go seven games is the goaltending specifically. Yeah. You've got Ottinger, you've got Bobrovsky. I think those are the two probably best goalies in the playoffs right now.
Yes.
It just, to me, it would be an ideal matchup. And I've been saying as an outsider, kind of like, my team's not in the playoffs, so I'm watching all these other teams. I just want good action. Yeah. I want games to go seven games. I want to see that. I just want more hockey, more exciting hockey. And this has been a really good playoffs.
Yeah,
I would really entertaining.
I would say this is Rantanen's playoffs, in my personal 100%. Opinion. That's why I want Dallas to 100%. Take it over Florida if Florida makes it.
I love can see Carolina. Rantanen lifting that cup and just being like, suck it, Colorado.
Yeah, I'd rather Dallas win too, of course. Yeah. But... how is the anxiety level for Eric Tulsky in Carolina after, not being able to re-sign Rantanen after, like, giving up the farm to get Rantanen? And then, I mean, hey, here they are. They're in the third round of the playoffs right now. But, like, he must have been crapping a brick when he couldn't get Rantanen re-signed.
I wish I could be a fly on the wall during that discussion to trade Rantanen from Colorado. Just, like... without discussing it with Rantanen, without anything, like, obviously it's business, right? Yeah. It's business.
What was he
but like, what's that discussion like?
Yeah.
Nobody calls him, nothing.
Yeah. I didn't think that Carolina would make the third round after they traded him away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos to them.
Yeah.
Again, structure, play style, work hard.
I mean, yeah, Rod Brendamore is a really good coach. Oh,
nuts.
Really good coach.
Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, and... we'll have to see if he gets re-signed in the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's teams just waiting for the Carolina to finish just so they can figure it out what's going on. But
in any scenario, how good of a chance do you guys think the Oilers actually do have? Like, with the bias aside, the fact that, none of us really like the Oilers that much. Sorry, Mike, if you're watching. Love you, buddy.
Look good luck. Your, not look really. Look into your camera right there.
Sorry, Mike. Not sorry.
Listen, I will be as biased or unbiased as possible. I think the Oilers are a really good team. There's no doubt in my mind they could go back to the finals again, but they're going to have to beat Dallas, who's coming off of losing to them last year in the third round. They don't have the depth of Holloway or Broberg this year to take them, to help carry them. And Dallas is a stronger team with Rantanen on it. I just feel like, you can rely on McDavid and Draisaitl as much as you want, with Bouchard scoring the odd goal here and there. That Dallas team looked so much better last game.
Five goals in the third period.
Yeah. In the third period is a come from behind victory. It's just you cannot sleep on these guys.
Out of the teams left, Edmonton's the worst team out of the four that are left.
Yeah, it would be interesting if we could like say stop after three games and like switch opponents. I would love to see Edmonton take on Carolina.
If they take on Florida, they might as well just start.
But I'd love to see. I'd just love to see them take on Carolina and see what would happen in that scenario.
Yeah.
And then you could be like, okay, well, that team's obviously the worst of the four, right? But we'd never see that.
At this point, Edmonton Carolina final would be. Bebin would just be like, "What? What is happening?"
I just, we've only got a few minutes left, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion on this discussion of play-by-play guys for Sportsnet. Now that the Leafs are out, of course, Chris Cuthbert and Craig Simpson have moved on to do the play-by-play for the Oilers game, and they're complaining because they would like their Jack Michaels, is his name? Jack Michaels? I think that's his name. The guy who like runs out of his breath because he's so excited about the Oilers. Jack
Edwards is Boston.
Yeah, Jack Michaels, I think. Anyway, what are your thoughts on the whole having Craig Simpson and Chris Cuthbert call those games as a national call for other teams? Because I know when it happened to us, the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers last year, I was upset about it too. I would way rather than having a national game personally. And I mean, you guys are Leaf fans. You always get them anyway. But and I mean that like with the utmost respect. I don't mean that as disrespectful. I just mean like you always get those guys. So like you don't know any different. Right. I mean, you got Joe Bowen who's on the radio and stuff. But like you don't know, like I have, you know, John Shorthouse that I would love to listen to call my games. And I had him in the first round last year, but then when it moved to Edmonton, it was Chris Cuthbert and Craig Simpson. And I'm like, I don't want these guys because they don't get excited when the Canucks score. You know, they do, but they don't get excited the way, you know, Shorthouse does. And it doesn't feel the same to me. You know what I mean? Like, I remember in 2011 when the Canucks went to the Stanley Cup final, Shorthouse was calling radio games because the national feed at that time was Jim Houston.
Right.
Now, I love Jim Houston because he was a former Canuck play-by-play guy. But what's your opinion on the whole like having a national feed for that and having like one team move from one team, you know, the Leafs, for example, going to, say, another Canadian team and calling it?
I mean, it's hard to say because you don't really get a say. So it's hard
but
to...
But do you think that's a warranted complaint, though?
I think so, yeah. Probably. There should be a way... For center ice, for example, that I buy every year, you can often watch the other broadcast.
Yeah.
Right? There's two options that you can select. I think that... And by the way, it is Jack Michaels.
Jack Michaels. Yeah. That's right.
I think he's awesome.
Like he's so fun to listen to, even so when, high energy. Know,
that's right.
Yeah. And just funny listening to him like always run out of breath when he's like saying stuff because he gets so high energy. Yeah, he's just like out of breath. I'm sure that like Mike likes him and stuff. I'm sure all the Oilers fans like him.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. Like the argument they're saying is like I want to listen to this guy call my games because he gets me that much more excited when they score goals and stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And it just feels like Sportsnet does not care about what the audience wants.
It's probably just because it's a money driver, right? Like if you get somebody that's called any other game other than Oilers, you know, like it, the rest of the country is going to know who's saying the game, who's commentating the game. Yeah. So they're going to bring in the national.
And that's the argument though, right? Like, so we as Canuck fans, Oilers fans, Winnipeg fans, blah, blah, blah. We look at it like, well, okay, if it's a national thing, why is it always the Leafs play-by-play guys? Like, why are they the number one team, right?
Well, how about this as devil's advocate?
Yeah.
Why are CC and Craig Simpson the Leafs broadcasters?
Exactly.
I don't even like them.
But that's the point I'm trying to make. Like who decided these guys are the number one team? Because I actually posted this question. I'm really running out of time. I actually posted this question on social media, and I got an answer from John Shannon, who works for Sportsnet. And he argued, well, they're calling it because they're the number one team. And I said, okay, well, who decided they're the number one team? Just because they call the Leafs games?
Right.
So we gotta wrap it up though. We'll have to just bring the discussion back for maybe next episode. But any final thoughts quickly before we finish up the show?
Well, we could have some drastically different results by the next time we record to see what happens in the first or the third round here. So it's gonna be exciting.
It is gonna be really exciting. Yep. It's been a good third round.
I won't be surprised this offseason that Marner does go the way he talked in his presser. They were very, you know, past tense comments. So it's time to move on from him. Hopefully JT signs for less and Again, I want to see what changes this team's going to make.
And I can't wait for the Canuck changes as well. So it's going to be a really fun offseason. We'll discuss a little bit more maybe next week when we bring our next episode up. But want to say thank you guys for watching. And if you guys wanted to reach out to us on social media, we're always available. TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. We're also on anywhere you can find your podcast. Reach out to us and let us know how you feel. And if you want us to discuss anything, please let us know. For the Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.